Perfect. Okay, welcome to the annual cleaning and koshering shir, which we have every year, Tavshin Pei Aleph. This year, obviously, things are a little bit different, a little different because of COVID, a little different because of Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbos, but Pesach is the same. Pesach is the same, so the halachos of Pesach are the same. Many of the halachos that we're going to talk about apply every year just the same. We'll see, obviously, there are some slight differences this year because Erev Pesach falls out on Shabbos, which makes things a little bit tricky. We've discussed this already at length over on Shabbos. We've given a couple of shiurim about some of the complexities, so we're not going to go into it in depth, but some of the basics we'll go over just so everybody knows. I did send out this week by email and WhatsApp a guide, just a step-by-step guide from Thursday through Shabbos, just so that everybody knows exactly what to do. I hope it was clear. I tried to make it clear. Obviously, if you have any questions or anything, please reach out to me. Okay, in the just starting even before Pesach, we obviously have a mitzvah of Maos Chitim. Everyone is familiar with Maos Chitim, Kimcha de Pischa, and it's a minhag. It's not the same level of obligation as, let's say, something like Matanos Levyonim, which is in the Pasuk in Megillas Esther. So it's not quite that level of obligation. It is a minhag, but it's based on a Yerushalmi. It's an old minhag, and it's something that Klal Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, has accepted upon themselves as a minhag, and everybody does, to give Maos Chitim for Pesach. Since it is a minhag, you can use Meiser money if you have money set aside. From your income, you have some Meiser money set aside. You're welcome to use that Meiser money for this mitzvah. And there is no set amount for Maos Chitim. Whatever you're comfortable with, giving. Obviously, give according to your means. Pesach is an expensive yontif for everyone to make. And certainly there are those in need, both in our community and outside of our community, people who need assistance. So definitely, if you have the means and you can, be generous, please do. There is a prohibition to eat matzah on Erev Pesach, which we'll talk about. And that comes up this year, in a little bit more of a prominent way than in other years. But there is an isser to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. The idea is that we want to have some sort of a recognition of, the matzah's mitzvah, which we're going to eat at night on the night of the Seder. So if we're eating matzah all day Erev Pesach and then we eat matzah at night, we're not going to feel that same mitzvah. So that's why we refrain from eating matzah all day on Erev Pesach. And we can eat matzah at night. We'll be hungry for it. We'll have an appetite for it. It'll be clear that it's for the mitzvah. Many people have a custom already to refrain from eating matzah from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, which was, of course, yesterday. Some have the custom to refrain from eating matzah already from Purim, 30 days before. So whatever your personal minhag is, that's fine. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. We do have there's a mitzvah, there's a halacha that a person is supposed to start learning about the halachos already 30 days before, like we spoke about. So already we're 2 weeks into, 2 weeks before Pesach, so certainly time to begin learning the halachos. Also, we should be careful about chametz. It's not just, it's not just for the people that clean the house who are nervous about bringing chametz, but the poskim talk about, even during this time, we should already be cognizant and thinking about, what we're doing with our chametz, where we're bringing our chametz, etc. Definitely time to think about that. And some hold already, if you start getting rid of your chametz now, there's already a mitzvah of tashbisu. The Torah says, tashbisu sormi batechem, that we're supposed to get rid of the chametz. We know we burn the chametz erev Pesach. But there's already a little bit of a kiyum, a little bit of a fulfillment of tashbisu as we get rid of chametz throughout the month before Pesach. Okay, that's just the introduction. Now let's get to some cleaning. I say this every year. Many of these halachos are the same. We review them every year. But I make this point very, very strongly and very clearly every year. There's a big difference between cleaning for chametz and spring cleaning. Cleaning for chametz is not the same thing as spring cleaning. Now, it's true that Pesach falls out in the spring. And honestly, that's probably where spring cleaning came from, if we think about it. But in reality, there's no obligation to do spring cleaning, right? If you want to do spring cleaning and you have the time and the energy to do spring cleaning, sure, go for it, no problem. But in terms of what's required from a halachic perspective, what's required from a, from a Torah perspective, there's no obligation to do spring cleaning. You don't have to go through the old clothes. You don't have to, you know, straighten out the messy closets. There's no necessity to do any of that. What we do have to do is clean for chametz. That's what we have to do. And Chazal talk about where we're obligated to do bedikas chametz, where we're not obligated to do bedikas chametz. If we know that there's an area in our home where we never bring chametz into that place, you know, we never bring chametz into this room. Nobody ever brings chametz in here. We don't have little kids running around with chametz everywhere. I told the story in shul a couple of weeks ago. I opened up one of my kids. You know that we have little. You know, we have a million toy cars. I opened up the trunk of one of them, and there was a bunch of oatmeal squares in there that my son had decided to stow away for a rainy day. But if you don't have little kids running around stuffing chametz in every nook and cranny, and you know that there are certain rooms you don't go into, you don't have to really clean those rooms. You know, you check them out, you make sure there's nothing there, but that's it. You don't really have to go crazy in those rooms. Certainly in terms of even the obligation to do bedikas chametz. If you know there's a room that you don't go into with chametz, you never put chametz there, you don't go in there with chametz, there's no obligation to do bedikas chametz in such a room. You only have to check the rooms that might have chametz in them. But anyways, but the parts of our house, which of course we do have chametz in, our dining room, our kitchen, our living room, you know, places in the den maybe, you know, where we eat there. So places like that. So then certainly we have an obligation to clean for chametz. Mida Oraisa, the Gemara tells us that technically speaking, you don't have to check Mida Oraisa from a Torah perspective. Just do bittul, right? We say Kol Chamira. We say this paragraph. We say it after Bedikas Chametz at night. We say it in the morning again after we burn the Chametz. And you do bittul. And that's it. You nullify the Chametz. I don't want any part of it. It's not mine. It's ownerless. It's Hefker. And once you do that, technically speaking, from a Torah perspective, that's totally fine. The Rabbanan came along and they said, not so fast. You really got to get rid of the chametz. You can't keep it around. Number one, a couple of different reasons are given. Number one, one of the Rishonim Tosfos says that it's because we're so used to eating chametz all the time. You know, the whole year we're used to eating pretzels and yodels and all sorts of delicious chametz and cake. And because of that, we're nervous to keep it around. Even if we do the bittul and we say we don't want it, we say it's ownerless and we don't want any part of it. We're nervous that it's not really going to be the case. And maybe we will want it, and therefore we have to really get rid of it. You got to search and you got to get rid of it. And because of this, there are a lot of chumras when it comes to Pesach. Because of this concern that we're so used to eating chametz, not like treif. Treif nobody ever touches. You know, nobody would ever touch treif. But chametz we eat it all year, right? Except for these 7 days of Pesach, 8 days of Pesach in Chutz Laaretz, we eat chametz all year. So because of that, we have some extra chumras. Number one. It's not batel. Normally, a little bit of treif falls into your chalent, a little bit of treif falls into your food. So we know the concept of bittel b'shishim. If you have 60 times the volume, of the kosher to the treif, then it's batel. You don't find that by chametz. When it comes to chametz, even if there's a crumb that falls into your dish, the whole thing is garbage. You can't touch it. You can't eat it. One little crumb, it ruins the whole thing. And that's why we're very, very careful, especially in the kitchen, to make sure that everything is spotless and everything is, absolutely clean and covered. And we're super, super careful in the kitchen. There are many other types of chumras that we have when it comes to chametz. You can't even have chametz of a non-Jew on your property, even if it's not your responsibility, but just have it on your property is not good. That's why we put it away. Now we put it in a cabinet, then we close up the cabinet, and we tape the cabinet or put string around the cabinet. We don't want it to be even, accessible at all. And you can't even touch it. You're not supposed to touch chametz throughout the yontif. Because again, we're afraid you touch chametz. You might come to put it in your mouth. You might come to eat it. Because of this concern, you're also not supposed to stay in a place that was not cleaned for Pesach. So this is actually, very, very practical in situations where someone's going away and someone else wants to use their place. Right, I'm not going away for Pesach, but if someone's going away for Pesach and they have an apartment, they have a house, so it's empty, and now their neighbor's having their brother and their sister and their cousins and everybody's coming for yontif, so they want to use the house. So the people going away were all excited. I'm going away. I don't have to clean. I'll just lock up the whole thing, sell the whole thing to the guy, and that's it. And I'm on easy street. And meanwhile, these people want to stay in the house over Pesach. So if the house was not cleaned, you can't stay in the house over Pesach, right? Because you're staying in a house that's not been cleaned for Pesach. There might be chametz out. You might come to eat it. We're nervous. And therefore, A person really has to, if there are people staying in the house, you really have to clean the house for Pesach and make sure all the chametz is away. You can block off certain rooms if, let's say, they're not using certain rooms. Let's say they're not using the kitchen. You know, they're only sleeping there and they're eating out. So you can block off the kitchen. The only thing is you have to either close the door. Most kitchens don't have doors that close. But you have to either close the door and, you know, put up a little post-it or a sign that says chametz, or put up some sort of a mechitza to actually block the area. We did this. My wife and I once stayed, we were staying somewhere. I can't even remember now where it was, but we stayed in someone's house and they hadn't really cleaned for Pesach. And we blocked off the kitchen. You know, we put up like a, you know, a piece of, we, you know, overturned the table or put up a piece of cardboard, you know, put up something substantial to act as a mechitza to block off the area. Now, because we're concerned, maybe you might come to eat chametz, we're really not all that concerned with little crumbs or chametz that's very disgusting and dirty and you know, and things like that. So according to the halacha, there's no requirement to get every single crumb out of your house, right? We're looking for, you know, pieces of chametz. We're looking for, you know, things that are more substantial. But, you know, to vacuum, you know, 103 times to make sure that every single crumb that's in the carpet is out, that's not something that's required according to the halacha. Now, the Rush, one of the Rishonim, does bring a Yerushalmi who says that the Yisrael Kedoshim, right, the holy Jewish women would even scrub their walls. You know, they would scrub their walls to make sure they were clean and get rid of every little speck of chametz. And also, Alpi Kabbalah, chametz symbolizes the Yetzer Hara. We don't want any little bit of the Yetzer Hara, you know, with us. So Alpi Kabbalah, there's also a reason and an inyan to get rid of every speck of chametz. So that's a nice thing. It's a chumrah, though. It's a chumrah to get rid of all these little specks and crumbs of chametz. If a person has the time and you have the energy to do it and you want to be machmir, great. Right, go on ahead. But if it's a huge tircha and you can't do it and you just don't have the time or don't have the energy, so then it's not necessary to get every little, you know, every little crumb of chametz. You don't have to clean the walls. You don't have to change the light fixtures. You don't have to do any of those things. You know, you want to make sure that there's no chametz around. That's it. You know, period. No real chametz around. That's why we don't have to go through. You don't have to go through all the sfarim. A person has, you know, sfarim and books, and you don't have to go through every single page and make sure that there's no chametz in there. If it's a sefer that you bring to the table, you know, and that, you know, you know, let's say on Shabbos there's a certain sefer that you like to bring to the table on the parsha or something like that. So then just make sure that you don't bring it to the table on Pesach. That's it. You don't have to go through every single page and make sure all the crumbs are out. You know, you're not going to find any real juicy chametz in there that you want to eat. Now, again, this is all the rest of the house. Obviously, the kitchen, we're a little bit more machmir. Because since the kitchen, we're worried, even one little crumb will mess up your food in the kitchen. A little chametz gets in, even a crumb of chametz, it will mess up your food in the kitchen and will make it chametz thick and you have to throw it out. So in the kitchen, even according to the halacha, we're a little bit more machmir to make sure that it's really absolutely clean, you know, and spotless. Okay. So in terms of cleaning the house and checking, you know, and doing bidikas chametz. So again, like we said, there's no reason to check areas where the assumption is that absolutely no chametz ever got into that area. If you have little kids, it really depends on the kids. You know, some kids, they're just, you know, they'll put chametz anywhere. Some kids don't. So you have to know your kids and know how they are. Any chametz that's behind a heavy piece of furniture is not a problem. You know, again, we're not concerned about that. Any crumbs that are there are going to be batel. Any larger pieces, you could do bittel. They're not really accessible and it's okay. So there's no need, according to halacha, we're not worried that maybe you're going to move the refrigerator over Yontif and pick out the pretzel that's behind there and nosh on it. We're not worried about that. And again, if you want to be Yisrael Kedoshim Haim, like the Rush says, you want to be extra holy and get rid of every crumb, okay, you can move out the fridge, move out the oven and clean. But according to halacha, according to the actual halacha, there's no necessity to do that. There's no necessity to move out the fridge. There's no necessity to move out the oven. You don't have to, you know, open the vents and get in there with a vacuum cleaner. There's no necessity to do any of that stuff. You don't have to remove the seats of your car. You don't have to make yourself meshuga to get to places which are really inaccessible. Any chametz that's in an inaccessible place, then we're not really worried about that. Again, the crumbs are batel by themselves, and the bigger pieces you'll do bittel. We say kol chamira, and that will work for the pieces, and they're not accessible. We're not worried that you're going to eat them. Again, Yisrael Kedoshim, you want to be holy, you want to be machmir, go for it. But it's not necessary from a halachic perspective. The poskim say that clothing and pockets should be checked for chametz. Certainly things that, you know, if you, let's say you wear a suit on Shabbos and sometimes you put a little kiddush, you know, there hasn't been too much kiddush this year. But, you know, you put a little to-go kiddush in your pocket. So then you should check your pocket and make sure that you don't have anything there. We're not worried about crumbs, right? You don't have to take a vacuum cleaner into all your pockets and get all the crumbs out. That's not what we're worried about. We're worried that maybe you put a pretzel in there, you put a Danish in there, you know, and again, you know, obviously a prepackaged one. But, you know, that's what we're concerned about. like we said, Sfarim do not need to be checked. Any Sfarim brought to the table with Chametz should not be brought to the table on Pesach. Obviously benchers that are used during the year should be put away with the Chametz. Those benchers should not be used on Pesach because those are obviously used at the table. There's a lot of Chametz there and a lot of Chametz on them. So that they should be put away. Things like toys, you know, sometimes, and again, you know, sometimes the Yisrael Kedoshim, the people that want to be really machmir, they'll run their toys through the dishwasher, you know, put their toys in the bathtub and all those things. Again, you know, you have to make sure there's no real chametz. And like I said, sometimes kids do stick actual chametz in toys. So you do have to be careful about that. But there's no obligation to clean your toys. If the toys just a little dirty, you know, you don't have to clean them. Again, we're not worried about crumbs. We're not worried about, you know, those kind of things. So there's no obligation to clean the toys. If you feel like a toy might have some chametz, crumbs, or residue, don't bring it to the table. You know, make sure it's nowhere near your food, nowhere near the kitchen or in your table. But you don't have to, you know, in my house, we do not run the toys through the dishwasher. We do not run them through the bathtub. You know, we look through them and make sure, you know, we just went through them. We make sure that there's no real chametz there. No pretzels or cereal or anything like that stuck in the toys. But in terms of little crumbs and grime and dirt, you know, you don't have to worry about that. any chametz that's outdoors, we assume that it is consumed by any birds or animals and things like that. Obviously, if the kids were eating chametz outside, you have to check because, you know, you could find a half a sandwich, you know, outside or half a bag of cookies outside. So those kind of things you have to worry about. But little crumbs and things like that, we're not worried about. Appliances such as toasters, mixers, and things like that, which are hard to clean, do the best you can. You should try to clean them. Do the best you can. But then, you know, we just include those. We don't sell the appliances, but we sell any chametz on the appliances to the non-Jew. That's included in the sale of chametz. So anything where it's hard to get the chametz off, and you did your best, but like you see, there's still chametz there. Don't worry about it. And you'll put it away in the closet. You'll lock it up and you'll sell everything to the non-Jew. The reason why we don't sell the actual pots and pans and appliances is because if you do, then you'll have to do tevilas kelim when we buy them back because then they were owned by a non-Jew. So we don't want to do that. So we just sell the chametz on them as opposed to actually selling the kelim themselves. Any area that is sold or rented to a non-Jew does not have to be checked. There is an opinion of the Chai Adam who's more strict, but generally the minhag is to be lenient. So according to that, if I'm going away, I can just sell my whole house to the non-Jew for the duration of Pesach, and I'm good. I don't have to clean. I don't have to do bedikas chametz. I don't have to do anything. There is an opinion of the Rav Yah who says that bedikas chametz is an obligation upon each person. It's not just an obligation on your house. It's an obligation on you per se. So according to the Rav Yah, you can't just do that. You can't just, you know, sell your whole house because then you're getting out of the obligation of bedikas chametz. And that's how we seem to paskin, that you can't just do that. So what we do is based on some of the poskim is that we rent out the whole house except for one room. That's what I tell people when people are going away. And again, no one's using their home. Rent out your whole house with the exception of one room. One room where you sometimes bring chametz, but it's easy to clean. So, you know, I usually recommend people that, you know, to exclude the dining room. Dining room, always you bring chametz in the dining room, but usually it's a bigger open room. It's easier to clean the dining room. So that way, that room, you'll clean. That room, you'll do bedikas chametz on. And everything else, you know, you don't have to really have to clean. You don't have to do bedikas chametz. And you just lock it up and sell that whole thing to the non-Jew. Okay. So that's in terms of cleaning for Pesach. Now let's talk a little bit about kashering. kashering for Pesach. So kashering is based on a concept in the Gemara of kibolo kach polto, that just the way, just the same way that that a kli, that an item absorbed the chametz, that's how it gets rid of the chametz. That's how it expunges or gets rid of that chametz that was absorbed into it. And that's what we do. We use the similar type of process by which the chametz got in to get the chametz out. Now, when we kasher things, so let's start with kashering things in a pot. So let's say I have kiddush cups, right? Now, even though my kiddush cups are probably not really chametz stick because, you know, you just use them for wine and grape juice, but they're on the table with the chametz stick kalim, so we want to kasher them for Pesach if we want to use them. So what do? So the minhag is that we use a pot, either one of two options. We can use a special pot that we have just for kashering, right? And just we have a kashering pot. That's what I generally recommend. Years ago, I bought I think the first year I made Pesach, I went to Amazing Savings. I got the cheapest pot that they had, and I wrote on the side of it, Hagola. And this is my Hagola pot. Every year I kasher my kiddush cups or whatever else I kasher, you know, small items. And I use that pot. I don't use it for food. I don't use it for anything, just kashering my Pesach things. If you don't want to do that, then you have to use a pot that has been kashered, okay? And the way that we kasher a pot is we fill it up with hot water up to the top, up to the rim, boil that hot water, right? Boil the water so that the water boils over the rim of the pot, and that kashers the pot. This is a chumrah. We generally don't require this. If you're kashering, you know, your spoon got trafed up in the middle of the year, and you want to kasher it, we just say you just use an Eino Ben Yomo pot. Use a pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours. That's it. We don't require you to kasher the pot before you kasher the item. But because of the Chumrah de Pesach, because we're more machmir when it comes to Pesach, so we require you to kasher the pot first. so that's how we do it. You can kasher, if you want to use a Pesachtik pot, you can kasher the Pesachtik pot. But then the problem is you have to re-kasher it afterwards. Once you used it to kasher the kiddush cups or whatever else chametz de kalim you're using, you have to then re-kasher the pot afterwards. That's why the simplest thing is just to use a special pot. They're not that expensive. You know, you go to Amazing Savings, buy the cheapest pot they have, and you can use it every year, and you don't have to worry about kashering the pot, re-kashering the pot. You don't have to worry about that. But that's the idea. Yeah. Right. Okay, so I should have said that. Thank you. For any kashering, the process is clean it well, wait 24 hours, and then kasher. That's a three-step process, right? Clean it well, wait 24 hours, and then kasher. That's the process for any kashering that we're doing. So you'd kasher, let's say you want to kasher your kiddush cups, you clean them well, you wait the 24 hours, and then you can kasher them in this pot. Once you have the pot, again, whether it's a pot that you kashered, or whether it's your special Hagola pot, whichever it is, you have to bring it to a boil, bring the water to a rolling boil, stick the items in. They have to be in for 10 seconds, 15 seconds, stick them in there just to make sure they really get nice and hot. You can also do it piecemeal. You don't have to do the whole thing at one time. If you have a long knife or something like that, you can stick half of it in, 10, 15 seconds, and then take it out, stick the other half in, 10, 15 seconds. That works also to do it, you know, half at a time. And then after we remove it, you rinse it in cold water. Rinsing it in cold water kind of finalizes the process for kashering. So that's in terms of kashering, you know, smaller items in a pot. Now let's come to the kitchen. So the kitchen obviously is the more complicated area. So let's start with the simplest first, and that's the countertops. Countertops, what are we worried about? Sometimes hot chametz spills on them, right? You're making a pot of noodles, and something spills, the hot water is chametz thick water, right? And, you know, something spills on them. Sometimes you take a piece of pizza out of the toaster oven and it falls onto the counter. That's a hot, you know, a hot item. So because of that, we assume the countertops are chametz thick and they have to be dealt with. Now, the only real type of countertop that can be koshered is granite, right? Granite is plain stone. Stone can be koshered. We'll talk about that in a minute. But most other types of countertops, such as formica, right, which is a plastic, corian, you know, all different types, acrylic polymer. There's all different types of corian, silestone, quartz. All of these things are not recommended to be kosher, because either they're plastic or they're made of plastic components. Quartz, for example, is composite, so it's pieces of stone that are held together with a resin, and the resin has the status of a plastic. So because of that, my general recommendation is not to kosher any of those types of countertops. You might find in some publications, granite's okay, we'll talk about that in a second. So you might find in some publications where they do recommend koshering things like quartz, you know, so there's definitely what to rely on. I think the OU might say it's okay to kosher quartz, definitely what to rely on to do so. If you find it in a reputable publication, you know, you can certainly rely on that. My personal recommendation is not to, just because of the plastic and the resin that's part of that. But let's say I have granite and I want to kosher my granite. So again, what do? Clean it well, right? Make sure it's very clean. Don't use them for anything hot for 24 hours. And then we kosher it. So how do we kosher it? We kosher it through a process which we call Iroi Kli Rishon. We pour boiling water from a pot, from a Kli Rishon, directly onto the counter, directly onto the countertop. You should use a Pesachdik pot for this. You do not have to kosher that pot before or after, because you're not putting anything in the pot. Previously, we were talking about putting Chametz Dekelim in the pot. So then you got to kosher the pot before, you got to kosher the pot after. It's more complicated. Here, you're just pouring water, so you don't have to do that. You can use a regular Pesachdik pot, and it does not have to be koshered, you know, after or before. It does not have to be kosher. If you want to use a kettle that was never really used for chametz, it was never washed with chametz dekalim, that's also fine. You can use a kettle as well. And you would pour it, you know, pour the water all over the countertop. The problem is, problem number one is that it's very difficult to do this properly, and it's very, very messy. The reason why it's difficult is because it's not good enough for the water to just run across the countertop. The stream of water actually has to hit every spot of the countertop. So you're going to have to use many, many pots of water to go up and down and make sure that the stream of water is hitting the whole thing, which is hard to do, number one. Number two, boiling hot water gets everywhere. Right, that's problem number two. And problem number three is that even that won't work for everything. So for example, if I take a hot challah and I take it right out of the oven, or a hot roll that just came out of the toaster, a hot piece of pizza, you know, real chametz, and it falls, or I put it right on top of my counter, so that's what we call a davar gush. It's a hot, solid item. That has the status of a kli rishon, and the pouring that I'm doing won't help for that. It doesn't kosher for that. The pouring only koshers for, you know, liquid that's splattered, or hot water from the noodles that splattered on my countertop. But for actual chametz that was put on, that iroi does not work. So if you did kosher your granite countertops like that, you still have to be careful not to put hot Pesachdik things directly onto the counter. You know, you shouldn't put things directly on, because there might be some element of chametz still in there that didn't get out, that didn't come out from the pouring and from the iroi. So that's why I generally recommend to people that the best thing to do is to cover them. I know it's not as aesthetically appealing, you know, you bought granite countertops and they're very expensive and they're beautiful, and you know, you don't want to have a plastic or something else on your countertops for Pesach. But it's complicated. You can kosher them, but it's complicated. And that's why I generally recommend to cover them. Now, so some people know that there's a method of doing it with a steamer, right? Some people recommend the steamer. I don't recommend the steamer for two reasons. Number one, the steamer only works if the steam, when it hits the countertop, is hot to the point of Yad Soledespo, which is, let's say, 160 degrees or so. I'm not sure that the steamers out there, the regular steamers, are that temperature, number one. And number two, if you don't hold it close enough and you hold it a little too far and just, you know, some of the steam just kind of hits it, nothing's going to work. It's not going to happen, because by the time the steam cools off very quickly. by the time it gets to the countertop, it's not going to be yatzah lettuce anymore, even if it was yatzah lettuce coming out of the steamer. So it's a little tricky to do it. If you know, you tell me I have a commercial steamer, I know for sure it gets, you know, past 160 degrees, and I'm going to hold it super close so that the steam, when it's hitting the countertop, is 160 degrees. So then that's something that can be, you know, that I can tolerate. But I generally try to discourage people from using steamers just because, even though they're appealing, but I'm not sure that they actually are going to do the job. I'm not sure it's actually going to be done properly. So that's in terms of the countertop. Let's move to the sink. If you have a sink that's made out of enamel or porcelain, it cannot be koshered, and you just have to cover it. The best thing to do is to buy one of those white, you know, inserts, stick it in. It's best if the insert is not literally resting on the bottom of the sink, just because the sink is chametz, that can probably treif also, you know. So it's best if the insert is not resting mamish on the bottom of the sink. But you do the best you can with that. A stainless steel sink can be kosher. And obviously the faucet, you know, area of any sink can and must be koshered for Pesach. How do we kosher it? So again, you know, you clean it very, very well. Sometimes these areas are hard to clean because the sink gets very dirty and grimy. So clean it very well, especially at the drain area, you know, where you have sometimes grooves and crevices and things get stuck in there. Make sure to clean it very well. I once read a recommendation, which I thought was fantastic, to pour some sort of a bleach or cleanser near the drain and also into the drain. The reason is because, you know, if you have anything that's there, so the bleach and the cleanser will ruin it and it will be pogame it. And that way it's not going to trafe up your food or your kalim. So that's a good idea to do that. Make sure sometimes the stainless steel sinks are recessed under the granite or under the countertops. So make sure you clean that area also well. And I would spray that with a cleanser as well, just to make sure that any leftover, you know, little bits of chametz get ruined with that. Once you've cleaned it very well, don't use it for 24 hours. You can use it for cold water, just not for hot water. So either turn off the hot water under the sink or cover the knob if you have two knobs or something like that. But don't use it for hot water for 24 hours. And then once it's dry and you let it sit for 24 hours, you can now kosher it. How do you kosher the sink? The same way that you koshered your countertop if you koshered it that way. You have to take, boil up a pot of water to a rolling boil. And once it's boiling, so then take it and pour it over the sink. Now again, the same thing. The water can't just run over the sink. The stream has to hit all parts of the sink. So it's going to take a while, and it's going to take separate pots. When I kosher, I, Baruch Hashem, have two sinks, and I spend a couple hours, you know, one night before Pesach koshering, I have two pots, you know, both going at the same time. I use one, and then the other one heats up, and I use that one, and the other one heats up, you know. So I have two pots. And it takes me a couple hours to do two sinks. You know, you got to do several pots, and each, you know, you got to do the bottom first, then you do the side first. You know, you have to do it in the right way to make sure that the stream is hitting all parts of the sink. And like I said, the faucet and the handles and everything also. Once you kosher it, then you should rinse it off with cold water. I should say one other thing is that a lot of sinks have these hoses. You know, the hose they use for water. So if you use the hose, you have to kosher that as well. So Rav Forst recommends running hot water through it while you're koshering it, because again, you have to kosher it in the way that it absorbs. So you run the hot water through it so that it gets it's hot itself, and then you kosher it with boiling water, and that's as hot as it can get. So you kosher that as well. You should buy a new strainer. You know, the little strainers at the bottom of the sink, buy a new one for Pesach. Those things are going to be very, very hard to clean properly and to kosher. Now, again, even when you kosher the sink, you still have the same problem as the countertops of this davar gush. If a hot noodle, which is a hot, you know, a hot solid piece of food, fell directly into your sink, then, you know, this iroy, the pouring, is not going to kosher for that noodle. It's not going to help you. So that's why even once you kosher your stainless steel sinks, it's always a good idea to have some sort of a grate at the bottom, you know, something at the bottom, so you don't have to put things directly into the bottom of the sink. Okay, oven. The oven has to be cleaned, obviously, first and koshered. Ovens nowadays are a little bit easier because if you have a self-cleaning oven, so the self-clean cycle will clean and kosher your oven for Pesach, and that's great. The only thing you have to worry about if you have a self-clean oven is the area outside of the gasket. When you open the door, the area outside of the gasket should be cleaned also before you run the self-clean, because that area is obviously not cleaned or koshered for Pesach. So you got to just clean that area and make sure there's nothing there, and then run the self-clean cycle, and then everything will be fine. Anything at the end that's burned up and white and ash is not a problem. We're not worried about that. Apparently, I'm not familiar with this per se, but I've read that some newer ovens have a different type of self-clean technology. They use what's called Aqualift or Steam Clean. It's a different type of technology, and it cleans at a lower temperature. Now, that's nice for the technology, but the problem is that from a kosher's perspective, lowering the temperature is not good. So those ovens, you have to treat them like a non-self-cleaning oven. If you have one of those ovens that has this type of feature, we don't treat it like a self-cleaning oven. This is a recommendation of both the OU and the Star Cable, publicized this last year, a couple of years ago. So what do you do if you have that, or what do you do if you don't have a self-cleaning oven? So you clean it very well, use Easy Off or something like that to make sure it gets really clean. Again, leave it for 24 hours. And then you turn it on the highest setting, which is usually 550, and leave it like that for 45 minutes. Okay, once it's like that for 45 minutes, so then it's everything is going to be burned out and it'll be kosher. I should say, we'll come to the stovetop in a second. Since the inside of ovens is made out of enamel, and enamel is not usually used for Pesach, so even if you don't have a self-cleaning oven, you have a regular oven, so then it's better not to cook very liquidy things that emit a lot of steam in the oven over Pesach. Better to cover things, because again, we koshered it, but we did the best we could with libun kal, but at the same time, enamel can't really be koshered 100% for Pesach. So if you have something that's very liquidy that's going to cause a lot of steam, best to cover that, and so that it doesn't emit a lot of steam and fill up the whole oven with steam. Okay, stovetop. In terms of your stovetops, how do we kosher the stovetop? So number one, again, clean it very well. Cover the whole top of the stovetop with something heavy-duty aluminum foil or something like that. The areas between the burners, we assume, are treif and chametz stick, and you can't really kosher those areas. So just cover everything with heavy-duty aluminum foil. If you have a gas stovetop, so you have to kosher the grates, right? The grates where the pots sit on, you have to kosher those grates. It's not recommended to self-clean them, because they have a coating and a paint, and if you self-clean them, it'll ruin the paint. It'll crack it and ruin it. So the best thing to do to kosher those is that after you've self-cleaned the oven and you've cleaned the grates, the grates are clean, then you could turn the oven on, the highest setting, and leave it like that for 45 minutes with the grates inside, and that'll kosher the grates. So again, if you have a self-cleaning oven, run the self-clean cycle, kosher the oven, clean the grates very well, and then turn the oven on, highest setting, for 45 minutes with the grates inside, and that koshers the grates. If you have an electric oven, it's even easier, because those coils kosher themselves. So all you have to do is turn the coil on until it gets red hot. Do it one at a time so you don't start a fire or melt something in your house. But once that's done, so then those coils are koshered. If you have a glass top, glass top cannot really be koshered for Pesach. If you have it, and that's all you have, so speak with me privately and we'll try to figure something out. But a glass top cannot really be kosher for Pesach, because you can't get it to a high temperature, because then the glass will crack. So it's very tricky. The knobs do not have to be koshered, because you don't use them for food. You just have you touch them with your hands. But they do have to be cleaned very well. So just clean them well. But once they're clean, then it's fine. Okay, so that's the stovetop and the oven. Microwave. So I do not... Yeah, I'll get to that. Microwave, I do not recommend koshering a microwave. And the reason, again, is because the inside of the microwave is plastic. Many poskim do not recommend koshering plastic for Pesach. During the year, we're a little bit more lenient to kosher plastic. But for Pesach, many poskim are machmir. So I personally don't recommend it. We just close up our microwave. We don't use it for Pesach. If you're really desperate to have a microwave, so you can buy, you know, they're having that relatively inexpensive countertop microwaves that you can buy just for Pesach if you really need one. Dishwashers, also very complicated. I don't recommend koshering dishwashers either because, and again, since the process of koshering is clean, you have to clean it well and then let it sit and then kosher it, dishwashers are almost impossible to clean because of all the nooks and crannies and crevices and little spots and spaces inside the dishwasher. They're almost impossible to clean. So I generally do not recommend koshering a dishwasher. Again, you might find in some publications, they might say that you can if you have a stainless steel one and you replace the racks, there might be some ways to do it. Again, yesh al milismach, there certainly are other opinions. And if you find it in a reputable place and you want to follow that, you have the right to do that. But my personal opinion is to avoid it. Warming drawers cannot be koshered because they don't get to the high temperature that you need to for koshering. And the same thing with hot plates. Keurig also, the Keurig machines, again, you'll find in some publications, you know, ways to kosher it. I personally don't recommend it because, again, it's the same idea. You have the plastic pieces that are involved that are there part of the Keurig machine. I don't recommend koshering plastic for Pesach, so I don't recommend it. Again, if you find it in a publication and you want to follow it, you know, that's up to you. But I generally don't recommend koshering a Keurig. Things like, you know, hot water urns. Somebody asked me about a hot water urn. They know that they use the urn. You know, they just use it for just plain tea and coffee and nothing else. So again, if you clean it very well, it's always better to buy another one, a Pesachtik one, if you can. These urns are generally not that expensive. But if you're stuck or whatever, so then, you know, and you really only use it for things that are really kosher to Pesach, you know, coffee, tea, and things like that. Or, somebody called me, they just use it for hot water. They don't even, you know, they put the coffee in afterwards. They just use it for hot water on Shabbos. So then really it's okay. You know, it's not chametzik really. Just make sure that it's very, very clean. Again, I'm assuming that you don't wash it with chametzik dishes, but you just have the urn and it just sits on the counter and use it for hot water. So then technically you can just clean it very well. If you want to pour hot water over the spout, you know, just to make sure, you can do that. But technically that would be okay. Refrigerators and freezers do not need to be koshered. Everything is cold, obviously. They don't need to be koshered, but they do need to be cleaned well. So you have to clean them very well. Some have the custom to cover, you know, to line the shelves of the refrigerators or the freezers. It's not an obligation. You don't have to do that from a halachic perspective, but some have the custom to do that, and you're welcome to do that if you want. If you have the old-fashioned ice trays, so then you should use different ones for Pesach, just because those ice trays, usually they end up in the sink or you wash them with dishes. So then it's a good idea to buy new ones for Pesach. Things like towels, aprons, gloves, you know, all these kind of items that are fabric. So you can actually kosher all of these things by washing them in hot water with soap. Fabric can be koshered by washing it with hot water and soap. Obviously, you have to make sure that there's no real residue, you know, after you do it. But once, you know, if it's clean and you wash with hot water and soap, you can use the same dish towels really for Pesach. I know a lot of people are not comfortable with that and would be upset with me, but technically you can do that. If you don't want to buy new ones, tables, you know, a regular table in the kitchen or the dining room that we eat at. So you don't have to kosher the table. Usually anyways, you have something on top of it, but you do have to clean it and cover it, right? So you clean the table very well and then you cover it with a piece of plastic, you know, tape it down, make sure it's totally covered because the surfaces we do assume come into contact with chametz. If you have a high chair at home, you can use the same high chair. But you have to clean it very well, and high chairs are usually pretty dirty, so make sure you clean it, you know, give yourself a couple hours to clean that. The tray should be either covered, because the tray is usually used for chametz. Usually it's not that hot, you know, because it's for a baby, but the tray should still be covered, or you can order a new tray sometimes, you know, from the company, but you should either cover or use the tray. A water cooler that has a hot water spout. So again, you can use that. The kashrus agencies recommend using a new water bottle. You shouldn't use the same water bottle that you've been using, but use a new water bottle for Pesach. And they say to run hot water through the spout for about 10-15 seconds, and then pour boiling water over the spout and that will kasher it as well. Okay, that's pretty much it for the cleaning and koshering. Obviously, there's a lot more to talk about with Pesach. We don't have time to get to everything. I just see some things in the chat here. I'm just going to look for the questions in the chat. If you have a question, feel free to type it in. I guess that's the easier way to do it. Someone asked if there's a place in the community that's doing Hagalas Kalim. I'm not sure. I don't know, but Ishe Yisrael is doing it. Okay, so they do it every year. There's a shtibel on West Broadway where the muffin place was, right? That was the muffin place. The Yeshiva Gedola used to be there. Now it's Ishe Yisrael. There's a shtibel. So they have one in the back every year. They do a Hagalas Kalim. I guess they're going to do it this year also. It's like Eretz Yisrael style. You know, you have a big cauldron of boiling water out in the middle of the parking lot, you know, with some high school kids, overseeing things. So you can check that out. If I get information, I'll send it everybody's way. Someone asked about an ice machine in the freezer. Ice machine in the freezer is fine. It's just water and ice, and you don't clean the ice machine in the sink. So that's fine. If you really just use that ice, you know, the bucket in the freezer for the ice, and you don't, if you wash it in the sink, then it's a problem, you know, because then you're washing it with chametz de kalim or chametz de sponges and things like that. So then that's an issue, and you should either get a new one or just don't use it on Pesach and just, you know, buy ice or make ice manually. If you don't wash it in the sink, though, and you really just, just use the ice and once in a while you wipe it down, then you can use it for Pesach also. Just clean it, you know, make sure you clean it, and then it's fine. Can you cover a hot plate with extra heavy-duty aluminum foil and use it for Pesach? I'm not crazy about it. I mean, technically, yes. If you clean it and you cover it, I would do a double covering. You know, you can do that. I just get a little nervous because hot plates sometimes get very dirty because things spill and things like that. But if you always keep it covered and it's clean and you cover it with heavy-duty aluminum foil, I would say cover it twice and make sure there's no tears, then technically you can use that for Pesach. I have a glass top hot plate. Can I use that if I clean it well and almost new looking? Okay, so let's talk to me privately about the glass top. That's very complicated. Is it necessary to wait to use the oven, sink, or utensils after koshering? No. Once you kosher, everything is totally fine. You could use it right away. Right? Once you the waiting is for before you kosher. We wait the 24 hours before you kosher. But once you kosher it, you know, it's good to go. You can start cooking right away and start using things right away. So that's it. That seems to be the end of the questions from the chat. Any in-person questions? Okay, instant hot in the sink. Good. So that has to be koshered. You know, that has to be koshered, especially because it's in the sink. Yeah. So when you're koshering the sink, you can kosher that. Yeah. What I would do is I would turn on the instant hot and let it run so that the hot water is coming through it, and then pour the boiling water over that. And that'll really kosher. But again, you have to clean it. But yes, when koshering grates in an oven, should this be done before or after? So I would kosher the oven first, clean the grates well, and then you can stick them in the oven and kosher them. Someone just asked about Brita filters. So I'm assuming you mean the whole pitcher. So again, if the pitcher is brought to the table and it's on the chametz stick table and you wash it with chametz stick kalim, I would not use it for Pesach. I would buy a new one. If it's really just like in the fridge and you don't bring it to the table and you don't wash it in the sink, it's just in the fridge and you just use it for water in and out of the fridge, so then there's nothing really wrong with it. You just cleaned it very well. But once you're bringing it to the table and washing it in the sink, then I would avoid it and try to buy a new one for Pesach. Yeah. No self-clean, you're talking about. Not a self-cleaning oven. Okay, so if it's a self-cleaning oven, just run the self-clean cycle. Yeah. If it's a non-self-cleaning oven, you have to clean it well, right? You know, let it wait for 24 hours, and then kosher it by. You should wait. Yeah. And then kosher it by leaving it on the highest setting for 45 minutes. So if you're koshering your oven, if you're koshering the oven by leaving it on the highest setting for 45 minutes, then you could just put the grates in at the same time. Because then you kosher everything all together. You kosher the oven and the grates and kosher everything at the same time. You can put the grates in at the same time. When I said before, you put the grates in after, that's if you have a self-cleaning oven. Because if you have a self-cleaning oven, you don't want to put the grates in at the same time because that'll ruin the grates. So then you self-clean the oven, kosher the oven, make sure the grates are clean, and then turn that self-cleaning oven on for 45 minutes just to kosher the grates. For self-clean, you don't have to wait because the self-clean is libun gomer. It just burns everything out.
Rabbi?
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for coming. If anyone has any follow-up questions, of course, feel free to reach out, call, text, email, whatever works for you.